Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Elissa Walker Campbell, we want to welcome you back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We are so ready for our college football segment, our Under the Helmet segment with Husker great Jason Peter. And before we look ahead to this weekend's action, we want to take time to step back, reflect, hit on some of the games from 1 week ago. There certainly were some very big winners, and we are always so delighted to welcome into the program this weekend our favorite guy, Jason Peter. It's great for you to be along with us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to get right to it. What were your impressions of the first week in college football? There certainly were some big winners, TCU, Boise State, and your reflections on the Big 12 Conference.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that it's almost the teams that won and won by big margins, it really has no factor, I think, in the grand scheme of things. It's almost the big powerhouses that struggled. I mean, Oklahoma needed a fourth quarter win. I think when you look at some of the teams that these schools were playing, it's hard to get excited, at least for myself. I mean, I know up here in Lincoln, there's a lot of people that are already drawing the comparisons with the new redshirt freshman quarterback, Taylor Martinez, comparing him to Tommy Frazier because he had a great game against Western Kentucky. I mean, you know, it's unrealistic to think that you can make those comparisons after the first week. But I think when you look from top to bottom in the Big 12, it's a game when a lot of these schools, these coaches, they're not showing a lot. They're not using their entire playbook. I think they go in with a mindset thinking, look at this team, they just don't have equal talent to match us on the other side of the ball. So we should be able to use a quarter, if that, of our game plan, and we should be able to come out with a victory. Now, unfortunately, for some schools, it turns out to be not enough, and you do end up having some fourth-quarter games like Oklahoma did.
Jason Peters along with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We're going to talk here in just a moment about his Nebraska Cornhuskers and just really a terrific performance, as he'd even previewed and highlighted last week about this kind of unknown quarterback for the Huskers, Taylor Martinez. The word obviously is out, but you know, Jason, what did you think about the top 10 when it came out here? Boise State in the number 3 slot, TCU number 4. I mean, would you have thought 10 years ago that you'd be hearing so much about these teams and how they have just really jumped to the very forefront of college football?
Never, never. I would have never imagined it. And you know, I'm a traditionalist. I like the big powerhouse schools, but you can't deny that these two schools are playing tremendous football. I mean, Boise State with the win that they had over Virginia Tech on Monday night, and TCU as well with the big win over Oregon State. You know, these are two schools that aren't supposed to have the facilities that can compete with the Oklahomas or the Nebraskas. They're not supposed to have the players that can compete with those types of schools, the depth. And whatever the case may be, for one game or two games a year, three games, they show up. And the record speaks for themselves. I mean, these two teams have tremendous coaching staffs, and Chris Peterson, as well as Gary Patterson down there at TCU. And there's a reason why both of their names keep coming up every single year when major job openings become available. But you got to take your hat off to both of these schools. If there is a year, I know a lot of people are talking about this might be the year that one of those schools could possibly play for a national championship. For TCU, I think you got to look at Boise, who is one step ahead of them right now at number 3, and you got to cross your fingers, I think, and hope that they either struggle against one of their conference opponents or they end up losing a game.
I think what's remarkable is when you look at when we start talking about Boise State and TCU and their non-conference schedules, I mean, you really got to give a lot of respect to their programs because they schedule pretty tough. I mean, they're pretty ambitious, you know, from the start and out of the gates. Here, you know, you talk about Oregon State and Virginia Tech. Those are not easy opponents.
Yeah, I think they have to. They're almost forced. And I think if they had their wish, they probably wouldn't play a school like Tennessee Tech. They would just line up the big boys in those 3-4 non-conference games and say at the end of the year, look who we played, look who we beat. These are the same teams that you guys play, and some of you have lost to those teams, and some of you have won, but we've won all our games. And, you know, it's I think when you look at college football and the program or the setup, that the structure of it all with the BCS, it's not a perfect science here. And you know, there is a large gray area as to who should be ranked at a certain area or who should play in a certain game. You know, I do think that they need to come up with a better solution, because obviously year after year after year, you have schools like Boise and like TCU, these non-traditional powers that are showing up year in and year out.
TCU is going to be hosting Texas Tech. They're coming to town on Saturday night, 6 o'clock kickoff at Amon G. Carter Stadium. For all of you folks right here in Fort Worth, we want to encourage you to go out there and check out that action. And let's shift avenues. Let's talk about the Big 12 Conference. If it's okay, ladies first, I'm going to start talking about the Oklahoma Sooners. We'll talk about your Huskers here momentarily, but obviously it was weighing a little bit heavy on your mind. I think you were anticipating that the Sooners would have played a little bit better and that perhaps Utah State's quarterback DeAndre Burrell wouldn't have given the Sooners so many problems.
Yeah, I was a little shocked. I think that was one of the games that you just expected to be in hand, I think, for Oklahoma prior to going into the locker room at halftime. And, you know, whether it's kids not really thinking that they're going to get the best out of their opponent, whether it's kids thinking that they can just kind of play at half speed against a team like Utah State, it's not possible. I mean, this is their big game. This is Utah State's big game. This is the one that they've circled since the end of last year. They've been looking forward to playing Oklahoma and going out and proving everybody wrong. So I know Bob Stoops has got to be not really concerned, because I'm pretty sure he knows what he has in his team, and it's just a matter of going out and executing. I mean, when you talk about Oklahoma, you talk about some of the most talented players in the country. I mean, when you know, the recruiting season comes around, and not that I'm a guy who gets all caught up in the recruiting rankings, but this is a school that pulls in some of the best athletes year after year after year. But I was shocked to see that it had to go all the way into the fourth quarter for Oklahoma to pull this one out. But you know what? Sometimes these are blessings in disguise, because you know, it almost kind of refocuses everybody, and it makes everybody kind of take a step back and say, hey, are we really running for or going for a national championship here? Do we want to win a Big 12 championship? Because if we do, we can't play like this ever again. Because if we play like that against a Kansas State or against an Oklahoma State, they'll beat you.
You know, one of the things that we've been hearing a lot of when folks were reflecting on that particular game, and, you know, disappointing to see that, you know, Oklahoma did not execute and that Utah State did play so well, is, do you think they were just working through some of those first game of the year, the jitters? Because a lot of folks were just saying Landry Jones, he just seemed like he was nervous. He wasn't himself, and he just wasn't, you know, making plays happen.
I don't know what goes through the mind of a quarterback sometimes. they're a different breed. I know for myself, I mean, the first game that you play compared to the first game of the season, I think that's a little different. And for Landry Jones, the butterflies, sure, they're going to be there, I think, before every game. And it's only natural. I think you should be concerned if they're not there. But just for him to go out and not execute, yeah, that is something that is a little odd. I think people had such high expectations and still do for Landry Jones. I mean, this was a kid that came in when Sam Bradford got hurt and you know, really, I think, showed that he's going to be a very, very good quarterback. And he'll be another Oklahoma quarterback that, you know, the NFL is dying to have. But you got to prepare yourself week in and week out. And whether it was him not watching enough film or maybe there was something that was happening that Utah State was doing on defense that was confusing him and he just couldn't get it figured out, I don't know. You know, usually I think when a quarterback really struggles, I think most of the time it's the running game that struggles as well. And when you look at that game, DeMarco Murray had a tremendous game. And it seemed like they were able to get some work done on the ground. And usually when you have success running the ball on the ground, well, it makes that defense commit to trying to stop the run. And when you have to commit an extra guy or put eight guys in the box, usually it's going to open up stuff in the passing game. So it really should have been a game that Landry Jones had success at. It's kind of shocking that he didn't.
Jason Peter is with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. We do want to take time to recognize our premier corporate sponsor and partner. They've been with us a long, long time. We appreciate them so much. Western Company of Texas. You can go to their website, wct.us.com. Right now, we are focusing our attention on the Sooners. And, of course, coming into town, Norman, Oklahoma, is Florida State. They got a terrific quarterback in Christian Ponder. What do you think about this lineup? Because they understand, you know, Jimbo Fisher, he's only in his first season there, but he'll have his guys ready to go.
I'll tell you, I wish I was in Norman for this one. I mean, this is just a battle of titans here. I mean, you're talking about two of the most tradition-rich programs in the country. And Florida State, you know, they really have struggled as of late. And obviously with Bobby Bowden stepping down and Jimbo Fisher taking over, I think there's been a lot of excitement down there. Certainly you got your old-timers that still wish that Bobby Bowden was still coaching, but I think like every great coach or player, there comes a time when you have to step aside, and there's a new energy, I think, with Florida State. And you mentioned the guy who makes it all run, and that's Christian Ponder. I mean, he had a great game last week, and he's going to be a guy that, if he continues to play well, he'll be a guy that plays on Sundays as well. But, man, I'll tell you what, there's nothing like when you get some of these Florida schools, whether it's Miami or Florida State or Florida, and they travel out here to the Midwest against Oklahoma or Nebraska. I mean, nothing's better than that. And I'll certainly be pulling for the Sooners in this one.
Okay, you mentioned Bobby Bowden, and I'm going to get sidetracked here just a bit. Did you like how, what do we want to say, forced out, or how he stepped aside? I mean, he's come out on the record and said that, you know, basically he was forced to resign.
Tough. I mean, when you're not down there and you don't know everything that happens and the way that everything's played out, I mean, ultimately, it's about results. And
he said he just wanted one more year, that he would have liked to have gone out on his own terms. I mean, didn't he deserve that?
I'm on the fence with this one because I do understand, you know, with college football, the longer that you struggle, the longer or the tougher it is to get back. I mean, for Nebraska being down as many years as they were, it hasn't been easy for them to get back. And, you know, people are excited now, but you look at last year and the thing that people were most excited about was probably a loss to Texas in the Big 12 championship game. And that should never be the case out here in Lincoln. People should be excited when we win those games, not when we almost win those games. And Florida State, in the state that they are, and obviously Florida, and the recruiting, I mean, these guys don't have to travel 100 miles outside of campus to get a full-loaded recruiting class. And, I don't know everything that was happening. I don't know if it was a recruiting issue. I don't know if it was, you know, maybe he wasn't paying attention to the details. I don't know if, you know, there was a loss of passion there. But, yeah, I mean, you look at certain guys in college football, whether it's Joe Paterno at Penn State or Bobby Bowden at Florida State. I mean, Tom Osborne was one of those guys that said, I'm going to step aside now. I don't want to be one of those guys that, is 80, 85 years old and people are calling for his head. It's stressful enough to be a college football coach when you win, let alone when you lose. I like to see schools like Florida State on top. I like to see schools like Penn State competing for national championships. It's not college football to me when Florida State is just trying to make themselves bowl eligible. It's not college football to me when Nebraska is staying home for bowl season. So, I think now with the money that's being made too, I think we're talking about a whole different college football today than just say 10, 15 years ago. I mean, now it's so much about results, and these coaches, they come in, they're lucky if they get 3 years to prove themselves. I mean, they want results now, and I think when you look at the amount of money that some of these guys are being paid, you can understand why there's so much pressure on these guys.
It is interesting when you think about just how much, you know, college football has changed the landscape. I mean, you talk about these guys. I mean, it's results-driven, no doubt. I mean, they're working 20-hour days, Nick Saban, Bob Stoops. You think they're going to have careers as far as the longevity like a Joe Paterno or a Bobby Bowden? I mean, you think they're going to be coaching in their 80s?
Oh, wow. I'll tell you what, with the money that they're making, I don't think they have to. I wouldn't. If I was Nick Saban or Bob Stoops, and I've been making $5, $6 million a year for the last 8, 9, 10 years of my life, and Nick Saban's not slowing down, and Bob Stoops isn't slowing down. Marvin Meyer, he started to. He tried to, and then he just said, I can't. I think probably some of these coaches now, with the money that they are making, they almost look at it as, I think, similar to what, say, an NFL football player looks at their career, saying, I've got a window here where I can really take care of my family. Because sometimes I think we forget that for as much as these guys love to coach and they have a passion for it, it's still a job for them. I mean, they're still waking up and they're still going to work, and yeah, they love what they do, but I think you got to look at it as it is a profession, and they do have a window here where if the times are good, you almost got to cash in on them now. Take a year or 2 years off or 3 years off. I mean, you see it mostly at the NFL level, John Gruden and some of those coaches that decided to go into the broadcasting booth for a year or two, and now it's almost like some of them are stuck because they've been out of the game for so long. And yeah, I mean, they try to sell it as, well, I'm refreshed and I've been able to, study other people's offenses and defenses. But, it is kind of similar to being an actual player. When you're out for that long, you kind of lose a little bit. I mean, you forget the little things. And, when you talk about paying guys $4 and $5 million a year, and if you're an owner or you're an athletic director, do you want to let a guy who's been out of work for 3, 4 years, do you want to give that guy, that type of money when you just don't know how he's going to do? I mean, most of them are in the broadcast booth or out of work for a reason. I mean, most of them kind of, started to slump towards the end there and were fired. And there's a reason that they're in the broadcast booth.
Jason, you spent several years with the Carolina Panthers, and obviously you saw, coaching at a completely different level. How different is it, coaching in the NFL as opposed to coaching on the collegiate level?
I think you're dealing with a completely different athlete. And I think that's why you see a lot of these guys, a la Nick Saban, Steve Spurrier, who, Pete Carroll now is back again. And I think a lot of them end up going to the NFL because so many people say that they can't succeed there. And, you tell a kid that he can't do something, that's the first thing he's going to do. And when you talk about these coaches, I mean, they have egos like high school kids. I mean, it's crazy. And you can understand why. I mean, we just talked about the money, and people worship some of these coaches when they have success at their program. But I think, for a lot of them, they go because it is a challenge. But when you get to that level, and nowadays coaches, the head coaches are being paid, right there on par with the players. But you can't treat those players the same way that you did college athletes. I think, and even now you're starting to see, I think, the pendulum swing with college athletes. A lot of Mike Leach, the whole you can chew kids out and you can get after them. I think that's starting to become a thing of the past. You do have to walk that line with being able to be the guy that disciplines and yells and says that's not good enough, but I think you also got to make sure you're the guy that has your arm around him when he's walking off the practice field saying, I'm just doing it because I want you to be the best that you can. I don't think you can chew a guy out and not have any sort of relationship with him off of the field, because kids won't play for you then. It used to be where, you know, at the NFL level, it's easier to get rid of a coach than it is a player. And, I don't know if it's necessarily easier to get rid of a coach now, but it's easier to get rid of a coaching staff than it is, a certain group of players that maybe are revolting against, what the coach wants. I think you see it a little bit up in Washington with Mike Shanahan taking over and Albert Haynesworth, who knows why he's doing the things that he's doing. But, a year or two ago, he's the highest paid defensive player in the NFL. And, he's the one that signed that contract. And sure, they have a different coaching staff there now. But, come on. How bad could life be? Someone needs to put this guy on the street for a week or two and take everything away from him, and then he'll find his love and passion for the game again. But, yeah, I think a lot of these guys come back because I think it's easier to coach college athletes. Not that it's an easier game and you don't have to put as much time in. If anything, you got to put more time in, plus the recruiting that all these guys have to do. But I think you can have a little more control over your players than you do at the NFL level.
It's our Under the Helmet segment with Husker great Jason Peter. And many times you have shared on our program just the fond memories, the family atmosphere right there in Lincoln, Nebraska, being a Husker, the close relationships with, Coach Osborne, the respect that you have, and all the other assistant coaches. Are you saying, NFL-wise, that you don't have that same kind of relationship? Was your experience completely different when you go to that next level?
It's very, very rare to have that family-type atmosphere. I think a lot of teams are trying to strive for that, but it was something that my brother, who played 7 years in the NFL as well, it was something that we talked about a lot. I think he had told me that the closest he had gotten to the atmosphere that we had here at Nebraska was probably with the Chicago Bears. And, there's a reason why there are certain teams that have had so much success over, 50, 60 years. And, it's because they try to treat their players right, and they try to, involve them in community things and team functions and getting to know, the people that work behind the desks and the secretaries and all that stuff, because that was stuff that Coach Osborne, he wanted us to have relationships with those people. He wanted us to know the secretary's kids and be able to, be almost a big brother of sort. He wanted us to fill more roles than just being a football player. And, he was always trying to, I think, help you develop as a person all the way around, not just in one area. And, it's a lot different. The NFL, it's a cutthroat business. And, you're a product for them. You're a piece of meat. And for as much as you think that things are great and, you can have a 5-year Pro Bowl career, the reality is they're preparing for your replacement. The moment you walk in the door, there's going to be somebody else who wears your number the day that you leave. I think the great franchises, they do things where they try to keep even the guys that are finished playing, they try to keep them around. They try to keep them in the family, so to speak. And when you look around the NFL, like I mentioned, Chicago, I know Green Bay is very much kind of that family atmosphere. But I think, year in, year out, the teams that look for that atmosphere, I think in the long run, they're usually the teams that have the most success.
Jason, when did you have that realization? How old were you when you started playing in the NFL? Did you have someone that kind of guided you along, or did you kind of have to figure that out for yourself?
I was 22, and, fortunately for me, Jerry Richardson is the owner down in Carolina, and he's one of the great guys. He's one of the great owners. And I always had a great relationship with him. I think it was something that he wanted with his franchise. He wanted that family atmosphere, but you're talking about a franchise that just started in 1995, and I had gotten there in 1998, and you know, it takes a while to build a family, and you're trying to find your right personnel, and I'm not just talking about on the field. It's probably more so off the field, but as far as my experience down there, I mean, there were so many things that I was doing that were wrong, and he was trying to help me make them right. And when you look at kind of the NFL, and most of these owners really don't have relationships at all with their players. I think now they're trying to, but back when I was playing, it was very rare. I mean, for an owner to strive to have those sort of relationships, but I mean, there were days when I would be walking out of the stadium, and he'd be sitting there in his car in the parking lot, and he'd say, "Get in," and I wouldn't ask any questions. I'd get in the car. I figure I can come back later and get my car. But you know, we'd go out, we'd grab something to eat, and you know, he just wanted to keep tabs on me and know what I'd been up to, if I was dating anybody, how's my family. And you know, I was fortunate to spend the years that I did in the NFL playing for a guy who's that stand up and I think that caring.
And I think, as I recall, help me if my memory's a little fuzzy here, but you talk about that in Hero of the Underground. There were times that the owner actually took you to the Palm Restaurant, and you know, you got yourself in some trouble, and he sat you down kind of like a father son, and just kind of showing that he really cared about you, Jason, as a person.
Yeah, I mean, there were times when he would, he'd have me over to his house, where it was a much more laid-back feeling, and his wife would be there, and you know, we'd be outside, I mean, you know, almost out of like a movie where, you know, somebody coming up, and do you want an iced tea or lemonade, and that, you know, just kind of hanging out. But then there were also times of that tough love. You know, you mentioned, and it's something that I do write about in the book, where we went to the Palm, and I had just had a DUI in March of 1999, and within a week, I think it was a day or two after, I had gotten busted, and he told me to meet him at the Palm, and I went to the Palm, and as soon as I sat down, he looked me straight in the eye and said, "You want me to trade you? Do you want me to trade you?" He goes, "Tell me if you do, because if you do, I'll do it right now. I'll get on the phone, I'll make some phone calls, and we'll trade you." And, you know, there was that tough love. You know, obviously, my answer was obviously not. I loved being down there. I loved playing for him, and there was nothing more that I wanted than to succeed, to make him proud, to make the franchise proud, to make my family proud. You know, there were just... I mean, you know, the injuries, the list goes on and continues to go on. But, yeah, I mean, the relationship that I had with him, you know, I look at it, it's a special relationship, because I know there's a lot of owners out there that probably wouldn't have dealt with some of the so-called shenanigans that I was pulling off the field.
Jason Peter is along with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. And, of course, I want to encourage you guys to go out and get a copy of that book, A Hero of the Underground, just some great stories in there. And, Jason, we're quickly running out of time. I know that we got a little bit off track here, but just your thoughts on the upcoming game with Nebraska this weekend. They're going to be facing a pretty stout offensive line that's one of the biggest in the nation.
Yeah, I mean, Idaho is going to provide a better test than Western Kentucky. But for me, I just... I'm going to hold off judgment here till, you know, they go out to Seattle the following week and play at University of Washington, which you know, they have their own problems out there, and I'm not comparing Washington to an Alabama or to a Florida or anybody like that, but it is a step up. It is a major BCS school, but Idaho will be a step up, and I think it's a game where you work on some of the kinks that you had in the first game, and you continue to work on the execution. And Nebraska, I think, you know, you look at the scoreboard against Western Kentucky, and I think most people would be thrilled with it, and I think most fans were thrilled. Bo Pelini wasn't thrilled. He wasn't thrilled with his defense. I think, you know, they tallied up almost 300. I think they were over 300 total yards of offense. Western Kentucky was, and you know, this was a school that had a 20-game losing streak coming into Memorial Stadium, and they were able to run the ball. And I think now, when you look at college football, it is going back to more of that physical, grinded-out style of football. And when you have a team like Western Kentucky that's able to have success, I mean, don't you think that a school like Washington or schools in the Big 12, I mean, a Texas or Oklahoma, that they wouldn't be looking at that film and saying, wow, we can run the ball on these guys? And I think that was the thing that was discouraging for Bo was, you know, there were a lot of cutback lanes, and, you know, whether Western Kentucky was running designed cutbacks, I don't think so. But now all the teams that watch that Western Kentucky game are going to look at it and say, hey, let's throw in some designed cutbacks, because this is a team that has some new young linebackers that are playing, and, you know, they have a tendency to over-pursue. They have a tendency to say, there's where the ball's going, I'm going right there. And sometimes you forget about your responsibility, your gap of responsibility. Sometimes, you know, in the first game too, everybody's so excited to just play football again. You know, sometimes the backside containment forgets that they have backside containment, and they're just going to run to the football. And, you know, you can get away with it, I think, in the first game or two of the year. But when you start playing against quality opponents, those types of mistakes, they're going to cost you. And in the end, I think you know, you can't win a conference championship or a Big 12 championship when you're not sound, whether it's on offense or defense.
Well, I think many teams, you know, Jason, in the Big 12, they didn't bring their best stuff last week, and that first game's under their belt. We'll see how they do on Saturday, and you talk about a very worthy non-conference opponent. You guys, it's not going to get any easier as you will be on the road at Washington September 18th. We'll keep our eye on that. We've got to run. We've got to get to our next guest, but I know you got the big birthday coming up on Monday, so happy birthday to you. You're going to be, what, 30?
Oh, gosh. I thought I was going to be 25 again, but every day when I wake up, I realize I can't even lie to myself anymore.
We're going to step aside. Thanks, Jason. We will talk to you next week at the same time.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Bernie Corbett's going to be along with us. We're going to talk some Giants football here in just a moment.